Okay, good to speak to you again, Mike, on this subject which we've been discussing on our last three episodes now. And on those episodes, we've been talking largely about the benefits that we've experienced from a carnivore or mostly carnivorous diet. And I think it makes sense at this point for us to pose the question and try to answer it today. Of do we think ourselves that after 2 years or so each on this type of diet, do we think it's possible to be as healthy on any other type of diet? So we'll try to answer that as best we can today. I think perhaps the place to start is rewinding back to the beginning. The last three episodes have covered this in more detail. But let's summarize why we are doing this in the first place. Do you want to go ahead first on that, Mike?
I sort of stumbled into it on the back of some S&C advice from Keegan Smith and the need to lose weight and become more athletic. So I was primarily for squash, and the idea that I could be healthier and have better athletic performance in the long term by changing to this diet was primarily why I started. First off, the weight loss, came across the idea of carnivore and animal-based diet, and a lot of claims connected to it. Thought I'd experiment 30 days, 3 months, 6 months. It's actually a year, not 2 years for me, so I've been on it for about a year. And people ask me, how long are you going to do it for? And at the moment, I see no reason to change because I have experienced, after an initial decline in athletic performance, I'm now back and above the levels I was before. Now, that's not to say that I couldn't have got above those levels before training, etc., but I haven't done any particular training to achieve that. I've just been doing my work on a day-to-day basis, which is a squash coach, and also playing squash. But I found I've been able to play more and coach more whilst on carnivore than the 2 previous years that I hadn't been. I've had less injuries, less muscle soreness, generally less colds. Although this year, I've had 4 months of almost like just an ongoing niggly cold, stroke nose, throat infection. But interesting for me, that coincides with me dropping off carnivore for a bit over Christmas. So I don't know whether that's coincidental or not, but for me, the benefits physically, and I think for me more so mentally and emotionally, I'm much, much calmer on carnivore. I have less cravings. It's easy to maintain my body weight. I've maintained now, I went from 12-12 to 12 stone in just a matter of 3 or 4 weeks. And then over the next 5 months, came down to 11 stone. And I've maintained 11 stone since September. And it's pretty easy. I sometimes go a bit below. I sometimes go a little bit above, but maybe a 4 pound zone, weight channel, I should say. And that the not having cravings, not wanting to drink alcohol, not needing to drink alcohol, not needing chocolate. It's just it's freedom. It's liberating in that sense. And also for me, I think another big thing is how simple it is. I have sort of felt this way before when I did my anti-cancer protocol, which was it was vegetarian, but with a lot of dairy protein from cottage cheese. So there were significant amounts of cottage cheese on it. But it was far harder. I was less muscle mass. It's been really easy. Someone said to me the other day, have you been in the gym? They hadn't seen me for 2 or 3 weeks. And I'd literally just done a few press ups. And it was just the muscle mass seems much, much easier to maintain on this a carnivore primary animal based diet for me. It's simple, no decision making or very little decision making. And so, yeah, for me at the moment, I can't see myself being this healthy on any other diet. I've tried pretty much everything along the way. Certainly processed foods for me throw a big spanner in my workings, both physically and mentally. Grains for me throw a spanner in the works in terms of bloating. Don't get me wrong, I love bread. I absolutely love it, but it just doesn't, and the struggle to keep the weight off if I start eating bread is really, really difficult. But for me, yeah, for me, the lack of pain from coaching, so joint pain and muscle pain, that's massive for me. The simplicity, the mental and emotional aspects to it, absolutely massive as well. What about yourself?
The main thing that has guided my dietary choices over ever since I've started to think about dietary choices, really, has been a long-term gut health issues since probably my mid-20s. I almost overnight developed gut issues. During that time, I've tried many different things and had some progress. But I think it's many times it's been a case of a couple of steps forward and a step backwards. So I'm definitely in a way better place than I have been in the past. But if I'm totally honest, I still do have from time to time issues that come up almost at random. One of the things that I have learned along the way, I say at random, that's probably a poor choice of words, that there is always, I believe, a reason behind it. But one of the things that I have come to realize is it's not just diet with gut issues. Overall lifestyle stress is a huge factor in that. And I don't think you can just ignore one or the other or just pay attention to one or the other. So the gut health part was a big part of being willing to give this a try. Also, if you look at some of the people who are advocating for carnivore diets, a lot of them look pretty athletic. Some of them have been, you know, professional athletes in the past, people like Sean Baker and Dr. Anthony Chaffee. They look good. They say that they feel good physically. They talk about having lots of energy. They're really good salesmen for the diet and lifestyle. So I'm a bit of a self-experimenter. If I hear somebody saying that, that they're getting really good energy levels from something that they're doing and their athletic performance has increased, they're gaining muscle quite easily, perhaps they're getting a bit leaner as well, I'm going to give that a try as long as it sounds pretty reasonable to me. So I'm always seeking to optimize. I'm always seeking to have better energy levels, better performance in the gym and physically in general. So it seemed like an experiment that was worth running. And also, I was moving towards this kind of way of eating gradually anyway. I was feeling myself wanting to eat more protein. I had moved into this phase of eating intuitively. And if I was just listening to the signals that my body was giving me, it was more protein, please, more protein. So I didn't go from something radically different to a strict carnivore diet. I kind of worked my way into it gradually. And during the 2 years or so, it might be close to three now that I've been doing this way of eating, I haven't been totally strict with it the whole time. I've had a few periods of maybe 4 to 8 weeks where I've been really strict. And then during the rest of that time, there's been various iterations of the diet. So perhaps I've added fruit in for a little bit. Perhaps I've had more dairy or no dairy. Small tinkering around most of the time. There was one period where I added in a significant amount of fruit and some rice, and that didn't work for me at all. So I cut that back out. The higher carb.
In what way didn't it work?
I started to feel a lot of strange energy crashes. I went back to the feelings that I used to have on a higher carb diet of needing to eat very frequently. Feeling hangry. But I also had a few days here and there where I just felt like I had zero energy. I thought something's really up here. The high carb, more of a kind of bioenergetic style of diet didn't work for me. So that was a four or five month experiment over this approximately 2 to 3 year period. But mostly it's been animal based with a few bits of tinkering around the edges, occasionally adding something in here and there. In terms of benefits, I forgot. Yeah, sure.
You talked about gut health being the primary thing. Actually, that's been an interesting thing for me as well, because growing up, I pumped for England. In fact, I probably pumped for Europe in the Ryder Cup. Yeah, I could fart every day on demand. Yeah, my wife, ex-wife and I used to joke about having a magic flying duvet, because it would be hovering 6 foot above the bed at night with all the hot air underneath it. I used to have to go for a number two 3 or 4 times every day. Now, I rarely fart at all. And I go at most once a day. Yeah, I typically do go once a day. And I use it once, it's clean, far less toilet paper. Sorry for the detail, but I think it's worth mentioning, because I used to sometimes go through half a roll of toilet paper trying to leave the toilet, basically. And so I think that to me signifies for me better gut health. It's certainly more comfortable. And I can eat a full meal and not have an energy crash afterwards. I mean, you mentioned the lethargy afterwards. I've just told you off camera about a treat that a friend and I had down at the seaside yesterday. And it was me. I did have a temptation to have this peanut butter chocolate cake thing. It looked scrummy. We just had burger and chips. I didn't have the bun. I did have a couple of chips. Had the peanut butter chocolate cake. I tell you what, I felt flat as a pancake afterwards, so lethargic, so heavy, just wanting to go to sleep. Julie was the same. And it took us a good half hour of walking, getting into the sunshine and the sand dunes and stuff to actually start feeling normal again. So that was something, the after effects. I get that we like this pleasure of food, but what does it do to us afterwards? A bit like alcohol. Anyway, sorry to interrupt
there. No, fine. So I just wanted to mention that, have I actually got the benefits I was hoping for, having stated those reasons for starting. So in terms of gut health, some improvements, but certainly not all the way improved. There's a lot of factors there, though, as I mentioned, that can be your general stress levels, perhaps overtraining. I did get sick while traveling, and that hasn't fully resolved. So that one still has a question mark over it for me. Body composition and strength. I haven't felt huge differences in performance. As I said, I was gradually increasing protein anyway. So I think any benefits in that department might come from the increased protein. So for me, not a huge difference there, I'm going to be totally honest. The main thing, I think, is appetite and energy regulation. So I'm the kind of person who will eat for reasons other than being hungry. So I'll eat for pleasure. I'll eat if I'm a little bored. I'll eat if I'm down. So I'm one of those types of people who uses food for a lot of other reasons. Prior to increasing protein as well, I just had a huge appetite. When I went more strictly carnivore, I did increase protein even more, which almost goes without saying once you start cutting out those last few other things. I hit a point where I feel like I can eat a couple of times a day and feel fully satisfied for hours and hours. So for me, that's a big thing. It's very freeing to not be constantly thinking about food. And also those other reasons why we eat, eating for out boredom and just as a distraction, those seem to go away as well. When you're fully satisfied, You just think about food less, I think. So, yeah, it doesn't go away completely. You could still use food just to, you know, break up your day with some pleasure at some point. But the desire to do that is definitely reduced. So that was one of the big ones for me, is the appetite regulation and just consistent energy and the convenience of not having to eat so frequently.
Yeah. Well, and we talked about, we were discussing this before we went live, that today I couldn't focus, and I've struggled and I've flip-flopped from here, there, everywhere. And I sort of wonder, like, the clarity of mine when I'm fasting or when I don't have this sort of high-low sugar thing going on, or the dopamine rush coming from the food I eat, I find it easier to focus. But given the foods that I had yesterday, and I've struggled to sit down and focus on the work I need to do today. And I think that's something that throughout my life I've struggled with, and this dopamine side of things. And I think we mentioned I had a diagnosis of ADHD, which I got a few years ago. But so many of the things that seem to come along with ADHD have been, if not totally mitigated, that they've lessened. So my emotional reactivity, the highs and lows, the energy crashes, and this flitting around, I have gained better focus and commitment to certain things. So, you know, carnivore for a year, my squash coaching now for 3 years, getting better each year, going through the stages, the qualifications, etc. So I think, you know, the mental benefits aren't to be understated on this.
For sure. So I think those points summarize our experiences. Out there in the interwebs, there's tons of people reporting all kinds of benefits that they're having, if you care to look. And in last week's episode, at the end, you brought up a study which was a self-reported study of some people who've been doing carnivore for, I can't remember the time, but it was at least a few months.
Yeah, at least 9 months, I think.
Yeah, should we touch on that again? Yeah, do you want to share that again?
Yeah, okay.
It gives a good overview of why other people might be trying this diet.
Can you see that now?
Got that, yeah. Behavioral characteristics and self-reported health status.
Yeah.
Among 2029 adults consuming a carnivore diet.
Yeah. So this was basically they trawled through social media forums to find people on carnivore, and then to do various tests and questionnaires, etc. The key conclusions: contrary to common expectations, adults consuming a carnivore diet experienced few adverse effects and instead reported health benefits and high satisfaction. Now, when we think about weight loss, high satisfaction is not commonly associated with weight loss diets. That's one thing I think, for me in the past has been an issue. Cardiovascular disease risk factors were variably affected. If I go scroll down now a little bit. Did I have the full thing? Sorry, let's get me through to the full text link. Is this the same study? There we go. Yeah, this is the one. So here, these were just general sort of characteristics that were looked at. And the column on the left, percentage of people who had a benefit, the darker shade column in the middle, percentage of no change, and the column on the right is the percentage of people who fared worse on carnivore. Now, what we've got to remember, this is possibly, well, it will be a biased survey because it was of people on carnivore forums, etc., and who were willing to self-report. So we should bear that in mind in terms of statistical significance. But the fact that 2,000 plus people have been on carnivore and had these sort of benefits. So 69% reported a reduction in chronic disease or improvements in the symptoms of chronic disease. 95% reported improvements in their overall health. 91% reported improvements in hunger and food cravings. You know, both you and I have mentioned that appetite regulation. The hardest thing when you're trying to lose weight is being hungry. And, you know, in the short term, you can do it. But in the long term, it's just an impossibility. Being on carnivore for the best part of a year, other than when I've been really, really run down, I've suffered with next to no cravings. Mental clarity, again, that's something I mentioned. 85% reported improvements in mental clarity, 66 in memory, 83 in focus, 69% in sleep, 76 in strength and endurance, 89 in energy. So all the things that we've mentioned doesn't seem to be just the two of us. And then just quickly, if I find we expand out the chronic disease. So looking at that, obesity and overweight people, 928 people reported. So 46% of the exam, the sample reported being overweight. 52% of them resolved that. 41% improved. So again, that's 90+%. Interestingly, underweight, there were 5% of the sample were underweight. And again, 80% have either improved or resolved it. 52% have resolved that issue. Now, I've come across people before who struggled to put on weight, didn't know how. Maybe this is a way forward for you. Lipid abnormalities, this is the blood panels. We don't know, without going into the detail in the study, don't know exactly what they're looking at. But again, 50+% have resolved or improved. Blood pressure, now this is a massive one for cardiovascular disease. 61% resolved their blood pressure issues, 32% improved. Cardiovascular issues, 41% resolved, 43% improved. So again, a massive 80+% that have improved. Diabetes and insulin resistance, this for me is massive. 74% have resolved diabetes or insulin resistance, or have reported that they have. 24%. So that's nearly 100% of the people saying that they've overcome diabetes or insulin resistance. Gastrointestinal stuff, what you're talking about for yourself, Imran, again, 90+% improvement in that. Autoimmune disorders, I mean, you look at these all the way down, it's 80 or 90% that have improved or resolved their conditions. I'll come out of that now. For me, that's just absolutely massive. And so if you do struggle with any of those things, do what Imran and I did. Experiment. Have a look. You know, if you need to talk to your doctor, talk to your doctor. But I don't think you're going to get much joy with them. I had cancer and my doctors told me nothing about any of this stuff yet. They can't believe where I've got to. You know, sometimes you've got to take a leap of faith. We've all taken a leap of faith in believing what the food companies have told us through the ads and what the pharmaceutical companies have told us through the education of doctors of what we should do. So if you've gone down that route before, or you're there now and you're not getting resolution, do an experiment, do 30 days. You can always come off it. You can always change. You don't have to do it forever. yeah, for me, it's definitely worth trying. I'm someone, because the science is only, the science on carnivore isn't there yet, but there's enough in the background. We haven't got on to talking about what ketogenic diets and carnivore diets are being researched for, what sort of conditions they're trying to look at, but there's a whole host of those. And sometimes you've got to take the leap. You can't wait for science and medicine to catch up with what is already helping a lot of people.
So I couldn't agree with you more. And I think both of us probably fall into that category of being early adopters. We're willing to give things a try and experiment on ourselves, do a risk-benefit analysis quickly, and if it looks favourable, try things out. I can understand not everybody has that sort of tendency. But just to reiterate your point, maybe in a different way, if you have a look around, how many people are metabolically unhealthy? It's the majority.
Yeah.
So what we're doing is not working.
Yeah. Do you want to just clarify what you mean by metabolically unhealthy? Just for anyone who's listening who might not understand that.
Sure. So we're talking about these common diseases of civilization, as they're sometimes called, that have become more and more the norm these days. So we're talking about heart disease, high blood pressure or hypertension, blood sugar issues. So that could be anything from insulin resistance to full type 2 diabetes, being overweight or obese. So there's been statistics that have come out recently that have said in certain countries, for example, in the States, it's something like 80% of people fall under this spectrum of being metabolically unhealthy, metabolic illness. The UK is not quite as bad, but not far behind. And, you know, do your own assessment, look around you, look at how people look. If you look at old footage of videos from the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, people looked very different to how they look now. And, you know, ask your friends, your family, how many of them are on medications for these types of conditions that is just considered normal now. You can go down that route if you want. If you feel like you'd rather rely on the conventional methods, fine. I'm not telling anybody what to do. If you think that might not be working for you, this is an option you can try. However, I do want to play the other side a little bit here.
Before you move on,
go ahead.
Talking about looking around at other people, I couldn't find it, get it on the computer, but I don't know whether you can see that. That is me prior to lockdown.
Wow, that's quite a transformation.
Yeah. So that was me looking at me. Yeah, you were looking at me. I was metabolically unhealthy at that stage. I had been fit prior post-cancer, but I fell back into the normal way of eating and socializing late at night. I mean, if I stand up now just briefly, I think you can see there's quite a big difference in terms of where I'm at and being able to maintain that. So we're not people who have been perfect. We have struggled. We've been in a bad place ourselves, and this is why. And the other thing I just wanted you to talk about, conditions. I think a massive one that's coming up at the moment is dementia and Alzheimer's. So I'm just piling through that book now. I don't know whether that's coming through in mirror language or not, but that's the Alzheimer's antidote. Using a low-carb, high-fat diet to fight Alzheimer's disease. So I'm just sort of wading through that at the moment, and maybe we can talk about that on future podcasts. But it's, again, another thing we're looking at, and they're calling that a metabolic disorder, as you've rightly said. So sorry to interrupt there, Imran.
No, fine. So I think just returning to what the question was that we're trying to answer here is, do we still consider a non-carnivore diet could give us the same benefits? So if we try to answer that question, my brain immediately goes to, well, what is it about carnivore that's giving people all of these benefits, and can that be achieved in other ways? So If I just went really high level, first of all, and described some of the attributes of a carnivore diet, well, it's going to be ketogenic or very low carb. It's a very broad strokes elimination diet. So it could be cutting out foods that are problematic for people. Quite likely, you're going to be eating significantly higher protein. So again, we can unpack that. There could be a lot of benefits from eating more protein, other nutrients that come along with the ride. And lastly, just still at a high level, it's something very simple. In a world that's just full of conflicting opinions, information overload, this is a concept people can get their heads around and run with. So we could go into the details of some of those. Is there anything else I'm missing in why carnivore could be helping people, just at a high level, first of all?
I think a big argument a lot of people would say that actually the reason carnivore is beneficial for people is because they're not eating processed food. And it's that replacement factor. So I do think we need to address that. And it's interesting because when we go, like, if you look at animal-based versus plant-based, they both say the same. They use the same argument against each other. And so what I would like to acknowledge here is that, you know, anyone who's looking to upgrade their health or optimize their health through the way they're eating, well done. And, you know, keep doing what you're doing because it will be better for you and your loved ones, both now and in the long term. But yeah, looking at this, okay, we can go into what all the ultra processed foods do. But essentially all the research that shows that plant-based diets are beneficial for health, you know, the fiber, the polyphenols, the antioxidants, all of that, they're all being compared against people who eat an industrialized processed modern day diet. They're not being compared against a carnivore diet. So then if you compare a carnivore diet with a plant-based diet, the plant-based diet, they're seemingly getting all of these health benefits, but are they getting them to the best possibility? Are they getting the best benefits? So you mentioned protein. And if we expand that out to amino acids, which are the building blocks of proteins and which our body uses to basically express everything about our genetics in us and to produce cell membranes and all the neurotransmitters and everything else that makes this body function, we need proteins for that. And the bioavailability of protein from meat, for me, is just far more superior to that of plant-based product. And the amount of plant-based products you'd have to eat to get the same levels. But then you come a cropper with all the anti-nutrients in plant-based food. Now, some people seem to tolerate that really well. I thought I tolerated it well after cancer. But when I looked at it, my hair was thinning and I wasn't maintaining muscle in the same way that I am now. And in fact, some of my hair's probably grown back a little bit thicker than when I was on the vegetarian diet. That's my own personal example. But I would agree with you. I think it's difficult to get what we need from other stuff. I think we do need animal products.
Yeah, so let's stick with the protein theme firstly. So I think most people realize that protein's needed for your structure, for muscle, and that side of things. But as you mentioned, it also has a factor with mental health and cognition. Some of those amino acids have been individually identified as having benefits for mental health and cognition. So that's something that people might not be aware of. It's also your immune system, hormone production, proteins involved with all of these things. And there has been a general trend down in Western culture of eating red meat in general. So red meat consumption has trended down over the last, I think, probably, let's say, since around the 70s, while consumption of chicken and pork has increased. And over that time, all of these metabolic illnesses have increased in line with the decrease in of red meat. So there's this general idea in the zeitgeist that red meat is not good for us. People have been consciously reducing it in the West as a health measure, but it doesn't seem to be working that well. It's a complex situation. It's not just about meat levels. But when people, I think, have the freedom to increase their meat consumption, they're getting the benefit of that added protein that they quite possibly had been decreasing compared to previous generations. So they're taking the brakes off. This was my experience, and saying, well, I'm not going to feel guilty about how much meat I'm eating. I'm going to eat as much as I feel like I need, rather than basing the amount that I eat off some study or something that I read in an article or a magazine. I'm going to eat what feels right. So there's that aspect to it. Also, protein is incredibly satiating. So we've talked about the benefits to metabolic health. A lot of that may be as simple as feeling more satisfied from your meals. So eating fewer calories, being less inclined to reach for junk, being less inclined to snack, it's going to have a huge benefit overall on your body composition. That feeds into everything else, your blood glucose regulation, blood pressure, all this from just increasing protein intake.
Yeah. So the protein stuff's massive. You mentioned satiating. So why might that be? If we get down to a slightly more technical level, we have nutrient sensors in the body. And one of the amino acids that is plentiful in meat is leucine. And apparently, there's a nutrient sensor, I think I got this from an Andrew Huberman podcast, that we need about 3 grams of leucine for protein
synthesis.
Protein to be built, synthesized at exchange. So you have to have that much. And when you have it, then, okay, now protein synthesis can take place. The food industry almost use this in reverse. They take products from the cooking of meat, that give you that umami smell and taste and everything, and they make extracts out of it, and they put it on things like crisps, so Pringles being the famous one. Once you pop, you just can't stop. They're proud to admit that their food is addictive. But how they do that is they take a meat extract and put it on a potato chip. And basically the body senses the meat extract. Oh, yeah, let's go for this. But you never get the amino acids and the proteins in to actually switch off the nutrient sensors. So you keep eating. And that's just one of the tricks that the food industry will do. I think the other important thing is how important protein is how important fat is. This has been massively misunderstood, and because of the maligning of fat along with red meat, saturated fat. But without fat and without cholesterol, we wouldn't have a brain, because our brain is, I think, 60 or 70% fat. If not more. Fat is involved in the membrane of every single cell in our body. We need it for, structural integrity. It's also an endocrine organ. It secretes hormones and inflammatory things, etc., if we get the wrong type of fat. So fat is absolutely essential for us, and for the formation of the steroid hormones as well, and the sex hormones, so alongside protein. So, and where do you get protein and fat? It's not in a pineapple. Kidney beans and a bit of protein, but you don't get the fat with it. Ah, what are those things? Cows, meat. Yeah, you get protein and fat. Everything that our body needs to build it, we get in animals. And animals have been in our diet for millions of years, or well, a couple of million years, as like a Homo species. So it's difficult to go beyond that for me. Having been vegetarian in the past, the arguments I see for the vegetarian side of things, I can see odd bits, medicinal, maybe, that sort of makes a little bit of sense to me. And I do enjoy vegetables, and I will occasionally have a bit of salad with my meat or something, because it just seems to complement it.
Yeah, just to maybe finish off that satiety point, there's a fantastic website called... No, it's fine. I think the fat and protein are really key aspects of what makes people feel satisfied. There's a fantastic website called Optimizing Nutrition. I think it's the work of Marty Kendall. Hope I'm getting his name right. His articles are really well written, looked at really thoroughly from different perspectives. But one of the things that he's done is collect data from a large number of people on what they're eating and piece together how the different nutrients affect how much they eat. So in other words, which foods in particular are the most satisfying? Unsurprisingly, protein comes out very near the top, if not top. I think it is the number one thing for satiety. Also, sodium's really important. I think potassium was very high up there as well. Cholesterol was another one that was very high. So quite ironically, really, these things that we're told to eat less of, protein, sodium, cholesterol, actually cause you to eat less, according to the data that he's collected. There are other nutrients in there as well. I think B vitamins were quite high up there too. But protein and sodium, very, very, very important for satiety. I believe they were one and two on the list. So check out that website if you're interested in this subject. The articles on there are great. Maybe we'll go into some of those in a bit more detail another time.
I think if I can just add to that then quickly, this idea of appetite regulation is that what you've basically said there, and is that, you know, we eat these animal-based products, these animal foods, and we are more likely to be satiated and full. Now, with plant foods, I can say that I probably lost weight quite easily on going vegetarian, but I did have a lot of cottage cheese and a lot of flax oil and coconut oil with that. So it was still high fat and it was still quite high protein from an animal-based product. I haven't been pure. I haven't ever been vegan. But I think it would be nigh on impossible to get all of the nutrients we needed purely from vegan foods, whole foods. I think it's pretty well known you need to supplement with B12, iodine, and vitamin D is another big one that vegans will struggle to get. But the flip side of that is people struggle. Yeah, you know, why do we even need to think about how much to eat? I mean, I look at the lions, the tigers, or the lions out in the plains of Africa, and there's a herd of wildebeest or whatever that they go for, antelope. They kill one, they eat, and then they don't kill another one for a good few days. But the food's there. The antelope haven't gone too far. They don't go charging back in. There's something that's telling the lion they don't need more. But in society today, we are, I think the biggest problem I had, I mean, I was nicknamed Belly for obviously reasons from the photo you saw before. I won the Pie Master Award in the triathlon club because I just couldn't stop eating. But on reading Chris Van Tulliken's book, it was really what ultra-processed people, he brings into it, and this was done by researchers in Brazil, bringing in this idea of what is the motive of the product that you are consuming? What is the motive of the company that's supplying that product? And at the end of the day, anything that is supplied in a food package is made for money. Now, don't get me wrong, beef is sold for profit as well, but there's very little you can do to change the profit margins on that and the amount of profit you can make. But with processed food, we can do an awful lot, and we can override appetite mechanisms. And so you are eating more and more and more, and you don't know why. You feel hungry. You're not wrong to feel hungry. You're not greedy. You're not a bad person. You're not Orinoco, the womble, who's like stuffed himself. And even then, you look at the food he was eating, for those of you who are old enough to remember. Donuts,
what was he eating?
Stuff like that. So this food is designed because basically a PLC, a public company, its motive, its pure reason for existing is to make money for its shareholders. And how do you do that? In the food industry, you get people to eat more food. Now, how is it that every other animal in this planet self-regulates on what they need to eat? You don't have obesity with wolves in the wild, yet with dogs who have descended from wolves in human care, there are a fair few of them that are overweight because we feed them all sorts of rubbish. And they'll eat anything when we give it to them. But you can see they become obese when they eat human food. We are the only species that can do this to ourselves. So the other weapon for you is, like, think about, is it coming in a package with marketing? The chances are, if it is, then it's not there for your benefit. They're finding ways to make you want more of it. Definitely with the biscuits and all of those types of things, but even the health foods, there's stuff in there that just messes with you. And we'll maybe do a bit more detail on that in another podcast about the risks and dangers of ultra processed food. But you can see it all around you. You could see it in that previous photo of me. Yeah, that's my bit added.
I think if I'm understanding that correctly, I think, as we said at the beginning of this section, if you're being intentional about your diet from a health point of view, it's probably going to move you in a better direction, bearing in mind where most people are, where processed foods are normal. So moving away from that, whether it's animal-based or even plant-based, if you're moving away from a processed food diet, you're going to get some benefits. We said that a carnivore diet is inherently likely to be keto or very low carb.
Yeah.
So if we're asking the question, can you get the benefits of a carnivore diet without being on carnivore? There's plenty of versions of ketogenic diets that are not strictly limited to meat. So people are getting plenty of benefits from ketogenic diets that are similar to what people are reporting on carnivore diets. So better energy levels, the metabolic health improvements, appetite regulation, weight management, mental clarity, less brain fog. So these similar things that people are talking about, people have been talking about in the keto community for quite a while. So we can't ignore that. I think that that might give people a bit more flexibility. So if you're interested in exploring this and you're thinking, okay, but it's just a bit too limited, I don't want to cut out every vegetable, I'm skeptical maybe that broccoli is bad for me, or some of these greens and things like that that we've been told I've got many benefits, maybe I don't buy that I should be cutting those out as well. Then don't try a higher protein, higher fat diet, and continue having some of these low carb vegetables if you want to. You don't have to dive straight into a really strict carnivore diet. I certainly didn't do that. As I said at the beginning, I moved into this gradually, cutting out the things which I felt were less beneficial and increasing the things that I felt were more beneficial. So my point is here, you could get a lot of the same benefits from being on another type of ketogenic diet. It doesn't have to be only a carnivore diet.
I'd second that as well, because I think when I talk to friends and stuff, the first reaction is, oh, I couldn't do that. I don't think I could give up these things. And doesn't it get boring? And I think you realize that once you've done it for a while, it isn't boring. But to conceptualize that before you do it is really, really difficult. And I get that. And I agree. I mean, both this book I've shown you already, The Alzheimer's Stuff, talks about low carb, high fat. This book, Why We Get Sick by Ben Bickman, is based on the idea that most chronic disease in the modern world is linked to high levels of insulin, hyperinsulinemia. And whilst he is a supporter of the carnivore diet, but he does not propose that people have to do carnivore. And his big thing is prioritize protein, get adequate fat of the right type, and we'll maybe briefly mention that, and then have a little bit of what you want. But it is this idea, prioritize protein and fat in the diet, and keep your insulin levels down.
Yeah, let me just clarify something I said there. I used the word keto a few times. I don't think it's necessary even to zero in on ketogenic diets.
Yeah.
I think low carb is probably a better term. Typically, when people are talking about ketogenic diets, they're talking about achieving a certain level of ketones in the blood that's classified as being in nutritional ketosis. I don't think you need to obsess that much with your levels of ketones to get most of the benefits. I think you can tinker around with lowering your carbohydrates and find the level that feels right. You don't need to be using urine strips and testing your blood and breath every few seconds and having a meltdown if you've gone out of ketosis briefly because you ate three blueberries too many or something like that. I think that just goes down the road of some sort of orthorexia and obsessiveness that's not particularly useful.
I would agree. And maybe for those who may listen to this, don't really know what ketosis is, ketogenic diets, etc. We can maybe expand on that in another podcast. Mm-hmm. It's used therapeutically a lot originally for epilepsy. I think it was the ketogenic diet from a medical standpoint came about. And is now being researched for a whole host of different things. But essentially, I agree with you, low carb. I think if when I imagine living out in the wild for the 2 million years that we became humans, or the 6 million years from chimpanzees to humans, even when you look at what chimpanzees and gorillas eat, they're not the level of carbs that we're eating today. We've managed to create this food source that didn't exist for animals out in the wild, with refined flours. We've also managed to refine vegetable oils, which have been used as car fuel and lorry fuel and stuff like that in the past. So that's interesting. But the vegetable oils can't exist on shop shelves without chemical processing to bleach them, to stop them going rancid, all sorts of stuff going. And again, it's not something that's available in nature. For me, if it's available in nature, it grows in the ground or it grows on four legs or two legs or whatever, it's got wings, it's going to be better than the stuff we're buying in packets. I would say that the stuff that runs around or flies or whatever is going to be better than the stuff that grows in the ground. There are various reasons why plants, and we know we can't eat all plants. Many are poisonous to us. We talked a bit about that before, but it was still some plant food is going to be better than no plant food in a processed diet. Definitely. But
So our last point of why people might be getting benefits from a carnivore diet was that it is almost the ultimate elimination diet. So it seems like these days, if you haven't got at least two food intolerances to announce when you go to a restaurant, you're just not in with the in crowd. Everybody's got at least a couple of food intolerances going on. And I'm sure 20 or 30 years ago, maybe they did exist, but people weren't as aware of them. So cutting out everything but meat is almost the ultimate elimination diet, because if you look at what people are intolerant to, it's largely grains and other plant foods, and also perhaps dairy and sometimes eggs, or maybe in particular egg whites.
Yeah.
So cutting all of those foods out and eating only meat could alleviate a lot of the problems that you're having. Sure.
On the back of that, I've just quickly looked up anti-nutrients. Can I share this screen with you?
Because
it expands on what you're talking about. Where have you gone? So, Healthline. So this is just a bog standard, conventional, mainstream health resource online.
Nothing too controversial on this.
Sorry?
There's rarely anything controversial on this. I'd say it's quite mainstream view of things.
So what are anti-nutrients? Anti-nutrients are plant compounds that reduce the body's ability to absorb essential nutrients. They are not a major concern for most people, but may become a problem during periods of malnutrition or among people who base their diet solely on grains and legumes. However, anti-nutrients aren't always bad. Under some circumstances, anti-nutrients like phytate and tannins may have beneficial health effects as well. We can explore that another time maybe, but the most widely studied anti-nutrients include phytate, phytic acid, found in seeds, grains, legumes. Phytate reduces the absorption of minerals from a meal. These include iron, zinc, magnesium, and calcium. So if you think about the food recommendation, the food pyramid, the recommendation to eat 60%, 55 to 60% of ours from starchy carbohydrates like grains, but they reduce these minerals, the absorption. So iron, do you feel low in energy? Are you perhaps anemic? If you're eating lots of grains, are you getting enough iron? Zinc, do you get a lot of colds? Is your immune system dodgy? Is it like a bit flaky? Are you getting enough zinc? Magnesium, energy and the ability to relax. Calcium, bones. So we're talking about all of these foods being healthy. And yes, there are ways to mitigate the effects, but all of these foods, these grains contain stuff which reduce the ability of our body to absorb the healthy stuff we need. Tannins impair various nutrients. Don't go into detail there. Lectins, found in all food plants, especially in seeds, legumes, and grains. Some lectins may be harmful in high amounts and interfere with the absorption of nutrients. And what happens here, they also interfere with the intestinal lining. Protease inhibitors, widely distributed among plants, especially in seeds, grains, and legumes. They interfere with protein digestion by inhibiting digestive enzymes. So I'll come back to that when we come back to you, because it was a conversation I had yesterday. Calcium oxalate, the primary form of calcium in many vegetables, such as spinach, the calcium binds to oxalate, is poorly absorbed. So we can see that's just a mainstream health site that talks about those types of things. So I'll come back. My screen, how do I stop share? Oh, I can't see where I'm stopping share at the moment.
It's next to the leave call button.
It changed colour. There we go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we talked about, there's two big things that come up for me here. Sorry, I'm flying off on one. Yeah, the connections in the brains are going. So sorry for dragging us offline
No,
here.
it's fine.
We talked earlier about the importance of protein and protein, how important it is for building the body, mental health, everything that is human about us. Yet many plant compounds stop us from absorbing it well. And what do we typically do? If you eat meat with vegetables or you eat meat with grains, you are reducing your ability to absorb the protein from that meat. So the question to me is like, surely, we need some vegetables to have with that. Great. The other issue is that not only are we stopping ourselves absorbing the nutrients from our food with these compounds, think about red meat being associated with colorectal cancer. So just a quick biology lesson for those who don't know. In our intestines, we have the small intestine and the large intestine. And the large intestine essentially feeds into the colon and then the rectum. And so the colon might be considered the large intestine. All of our food should be, most of our food should be digested and absorbed in the small intestine. So the protein that we eat should never get to the colon. And this was just a thought I had yesterday talking about this with Julie. It's like, why is red meat associated with colon cancer? It should never get there. Well, maybe it's getting there because of the foods we're eating it with that are stopping its absorption, these protease inhibitors. Think about what we eat a lot of our meat with, bread in sandwiches, pasta in lasagna and bolognese, all of these things. So maybe the combination of these starchy carbs and these plant foods with the meat is a big issue. And we maybe get away with that a bit more with leafy greens and stuff, but I still think that to me was like a bit of an eye-opener. Yeah, why colon cancer when actually protein gets absorbed in the small intestine?
Well, should
It
be,
should never
yeah.
get there. So that's a question I intend to explore.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up about the anti-nutrients, because I think that will blow some people's minds. Because we've been fed this idea of plant-based this, plant-based that, as though plants are inherently good for us. But as you said, we can't eat most plants. Most plants are inedible to humans. And those that
Yes.
are edible need to, most of them need to be cooked, processed in various different ways to
Fermented,
make
yeah,
them
we need to
edible.
treat them in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. And then still can have these many drawbacks in that they're actually preventing absorption of other nutrients. Just to circle back to the food intolerances thing, because this is something I can talk about at length through my own experiences. So, if you're a person that's had food intolerances or you suspect food intolerances because you're having some kind of gut issues, it can be incredibly difficult to pinpoint exactly where they're coming from, particularly on a mixed diet. So, many people who would say that they're eating healthy probably have a huge amount of different foods in their diet, and that's considered normal. So identifying one thing that's causing problems can be really difficult. So this carnivore diet, even if you don't want to do it long term, it can be a good reset in the short term to get you some symptom relief and cut out the most likely offenders. If you went as far as eating meat only, you'd also be cutting out dairy and eggs, which can also cause food intolerances. So it
Yeah.
could be a good reset for you to try, at least in the short term, and then strategically add foods back in. When you're trying to do it the other way around and just cut one or two things out, let's say you decide to cut out gluten and then you decide to cut out dairy, there can still be other foods that you haven't identified because there's so many foods in your diet. There's also the issue of cross-reactivity. It seems like some foods combined together cause problems,
Yeah.
but maybe singly wouldn't cause the same problem. So trying to figure all that out in a very mixed diet is almost impossible from my experience. And believe me, I've tried. I've gone through extensive periods of food diaries, analyzing everything I was eating, trying to link it to the symptoms I was having, and I didn't get anywhere with it. I just came to the conclusion I was intolerant to almost everything. So this could be a better strategy to go fully in with the ultimate elimination diet and then work back from there. So those are my sort of top level thoughts, broken down a little bit into the detail of why people could be getting benefits from carnivore diet and some reasons why you might want to try it. Is there anything that we've missed there? Any other reasons, Mike, that you can think of that people might be getting benefits from a carnivore diet? We did mention the simplicity factor as well.
I think there's the nutrients. I think you can pretty much get all the nutrients you need from animal-based products. We've discussed, I think, in previous podcasts that vitamin C, you need less vitamin C when you don't eat carbohydrates because they compete for the same transport mechanism within the body. So the more carbohydrates you eat, the more vitamin C you seemingly need to eat, I think, on a simplistic way of looking at it. And with meat, you don't need that. And there are trace amounts of vitamin C in meat. The minerals, the vitamins that we all need are through a range of things, different meats and shellfish and fish. You can get a lot of all the different things that you need. And that gives you a little bit of variety as well. There are people out there who will stick just to their red meat and water. But I don't think it has to be that. I will often have prawns and shrimps with mine. I'll have smoked salmon. The shrimps provide a good level of cholesterol that we need. I'm thinking the other stuff. I think intestinal health. I think so. You talked about gut health. I think that's massive. So people, we haven't used the term yet, leaky gut. A lot of people will understand that, or a lot of people out there with some form of irritable bowel syndrome, maybe diverticulitis or diverticulosis, the precursor to it. All of the compounds, those anti-nutrients and that contribute to those issues and what you said about cross-reactivity. So a lot of people would cut out dairy, but they had leaky gut from eating grains. So there was all sorts of other stuff that were causing problems. So yeah, go the elimination diet. Simplicity for the carnivore, food prep time. Time is one of our biggest issues. I haven't got time to do this. I haven't got time to be healthy. When I was on the anti-cancer protocol, so I had the juice, I had to cook everything vegetarian, and I whipped up my cottage cheese mix with flax oil, and then I would put fruits and things in it. But my average prep time for a meal, for chopping, peeling, cooking, was at least half an hour, if not more, per meal. And then if I take the time I went to the toilet as well and add that on top of it, that's a big chunk each day. On meat, what I currently do, my average prep and cooking time is about 10 minutes per meal, and I eat twice a day. So, you know, and that comes, I mean, we've discussed that I eat raw mince occasionally, not all the time, but I do. Now, not many people will want to go down that road. But if I, basically, I can put it in a frying pan or I can put it in the air fryer, I can make a burger, slap it in the air fryer. In less than 10 minutes, it's done. I can get a steak, whack it in the air fryer. In less than 10 minutes, it's done. I can get bigger pieces of meat. It takes a bit longer. But I can, you know, eggs, chuck them in a pan. Again, three minutes, done. So the time is massive. If you think time is an issue and you can't be healthy, then carnivore is the way to go.
Yeah, and even if you feel that carnivore is too restrictive, you could do exactly what Mike's just said, really simple preparation of meat and add some fruit in if you want to have some fruit. Super yeah. convenient, super easy diet. Doesn't have to be complicated. You could go mad and even put some salad in there for variety if you really wanted to.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to think of ways that this can be made more flexible for people.
I pinch a bit of Julie's red peppers every now and then because I quite like red peppers. So it's just, animal-based is the way forward for me. Cook your broth if you've got the time. I love broth. That's that would be a big thing. You get, and I think you do get a better range of amino acids and protein, like from having the broth and the minerals from the bones. So the bones will gradually break down through the cooking, and you get the minerals from that. A lot of people buy, you know, they buy these skincare products. So an ex of mine, she would spend £200 on moisturizing creams, etc. I used to use the cheapest hand cream and just slap it on my face. Now I don't even use moisturizing cream on my face at all or anything like that. You get enough, all the stuff they put in there, collagen. That was one of the words. Like a lot of these beauty products have collagen in them. Well, skin, bone, fat, tendons and ligaments, if you cook all of that in a broth, you're going to get all the collagen that you need. When I eat my chicken drumsticks, I eat all the cartilage off them. That's just, I think an Asian thing. I know in the Philippines, a friend's wife told me that cartilage in the Philippines is a delicacy. So my bones, chicken bones, look like they've been run through an acid wash. There's just nothing left on them because I will chew everything. And not wanting to blow my own trumpet, but a lot of people tend to say I don't look my age and my skin's pretty good for where I'm at. And I credit a lot of that to eating the full animal-based food. And I've eaten meat all my life and I've always liked the chicken skin, the pork skin, where a lot of the gelatin and the collagen and all of that sort of stuff is. And these are sold as separate supplements. Well, you don't need the supplements. One more thing, going to creatine. A lot of people eat creatine as a supplement, you know, for sports performance. And then also now, in the last few years, it's been heavily researched in terms of dementia and cognitive decline. There's quite a few YouTube videos and scientists talking about this. The average dosage that seems to be recommended is 5 to 10 grams a day. Well, in a kilo of meat, you get 5-ish grams of creatine. So it's almost like, well, is creatine a supplement or is that just what we used to eat? And we're actually just normalizing our diet. I reiterate the mental health, the cognitive decline as we age, the benefits, not just now, not just the current weight loss, but where we are in the future. I think you mentioned Hong Kong. Highest life expectancy.
Around a kilo of meat a day that is their average consumption, by the way.
Now, obviously, they're materially probably a lot better off than a lot of places, but I think what it serves to prove is, or at least question, that meat is bad for you.
Can we wrap this one up around here? So I think summarizing, yes, we believe that animal foods are a very important part of the diet. I personally think there's some flexibility that you can have. I don't think you have to be strict carnivore, but coming from a place of animal-based, where animal foods make up a significant amount of your diet, I think it's going to be beneficial for most people.
I agree wholeheartedly. And I'm not going to say anything more because otherwise I'll rabbit on for another half hour.
Well, thanks very much, Mike. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, cheers. Any idea for people who are going to see this, what we might do as the next one?
Well, we've been discussing quite a few things. I think we've opened the subject of ultra-processed food quite a few times.
Yeah.
I think that's something we could drill into a little bit more. So, yeah, perhaps on the next one we can get into that subject.
Yeah, we can maybe and maybe get into some of the conditions in a little bit more detail and how the nutrition can help.
Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Cool. So,
okay.
Thanks a lot, Imran.
Sounds good.
Cheers.
Cheers, Mike.
All right. Cheers, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye.